That's the Jazz Crusaders with Way Back Home. It's from their 1970 album, Old Socks, New Shoes, New Socks, Old Shoes. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I played that to kind of set the scene for where we're going today as people still try to find a place called home, whether they are in the areas that are besieged by all kinds of disasters, or whether they are in other places looking for a way to link up with friends and family. And it's all about reestablishing this notion of home. Evacuations are continuing in northwest Puerto Rico, in the vicinity of Guajataca Dam, in preparation for a possible imminent break of the dam. And there is massive evacuation going on. The estimation is that at least 75,000 people have to be relocated from that area. I don't understand, though, how that dam, which has been there for quite some time, is made of concrete and dirt. They have discovered a fault in the dam, and it appears that the dam is breaking under the addition of more water as a result of rain falling, and the dam is in imminent danger of breaking. So that's yet another problem added to the major problems they already are having in Puerto Rico, trying to just recover, as is the whole region in one way or the other affected by hurricanes, a succession of hurricanes, as you know. Help has begun to trickle in, and trickle is the word here, the key word, but not nearly enough to meet the need. It is still difficult to reach many people who are far inland or who are in areas that have been encumbered by fallen trees and other things that are impeding movement toward them. So it is a very difficult situation. Power, electricity, cell phones, still no service, and it is expected to remain that way for some time. Two new earthquakes in Mexico City, and a rattled population is dealing with that. They don't know whether they've seen the end of earthquakes for the time being, because these two new earthquakes are making it three since September the 8th that have struck that area in Mexico City. And I want to talk about what we are seeing here. The response by the United States and Britain in particular to current and former territories in the Caribbean that have been devastated by the recent spate of hurricanes tells a story that goes far beyond the matter of humanitarian aid. At least I think so. It tells a very nasty story. And among the things that must occur, along with just getting back to whatever is considered normal, is an examination of these countries, these islands, to their main, how should I say, the main partners. I, for one, am exceedingly offended. And I think there ought to be a movement as soon as possible, as soon as people could climb out of this, to cut ties. And in some way or the other, reestablish themselves. Because being attached, meaning being captives, having been captured by countries like Britain, or it may be Holland, or it may be the United States, it has, I would argue, been of little benefit to them. Little benefit. And yet they continue to be affiliated. And that's the wrong word. These islands were not affiliated. They're not freely affiliated with anybody. They were captured. And even when the larger islands like Jamaica, Puerto Rico, decided that they would break free, they've had enough of colonialism and imperialism, and they live in this hybrid world in which they're neither fish nor fowl, I think they ought to re-examine these relationships. Now, we all agree that there was a horrible sequence of storms, devastating. You should have heard the report from the Prime Minister of Dominica, in tears, about what has happened to his country. It's a little island. People would say, well, it's a little island. And so it is. But it's a country. It's somebody's country. And they identify that with that concept of being a country. Even though, frankly, they have been held hostage by Britain for hundreds of years. A little island that ought to be left alone. You may be surprised to know that little Dominica, it's a little island, were it not for Dominica, I think the Caribbean would have starved. During the war among the big guys, it fed the Caribbean. It's a lush island and known for its agriculture. Small island, but self-sufficient. There's nothing wrong with a small island being self-sufficient. If people would just leave it alone. Dominica has always been a small island. It started out that way. And agriculture was its, and still is, its signature method or mode by which it earns revenue. Do you know that small island producing bananas, let's say? Do you know the giants of banana production? And we all agree, no bananas are grown in the United States. But the banana giant in the United States that similarly has swept up banana production in other parts of the world to have a monopoly on it will not allow small little Dominica to sell its bananas on the open market. It blocks it. The little bit of sugarcane that Dominica grows, a little bit of sugar it produces compared with the behemoths of sugar production. Britain takes the position, Dominica is not allowed to sell its own sugar. Britain is doing that. Now, is this fair? Is this right? And this has been going on for years. You produce sugar, but they will not permit you to sell it on the open market because they want a monopoly on sugar to sell it. So it turns out, in terms of agriculture, this island clearly has demonstrated that it could feed itself and more. The big guys, the big bullies, are squashing every opportunity for them to have access to a market. You see? So this is how these big countries have behaved for a long, long time. So that even when an island declares it is independent, you have to ask, of what? You are held hostage in one way or the other by the big guys who used to own you. And that's what they call a symbiotic relationship. I ask you, is that symbiotic at all, the way these arrangements operate? So that now, when Dominica could at least help itself a little bit, after this devastation, which will take years to recover from, bananas happen to grow rather quickly. That's the beauty of a banana tree. It practically never dies. You cut it down, it comes back up again. So that another crop could be ready within a relatively short time, and similar other crops. So that if you can conjecture, if a small island like Dominica could participate and could do something for itself the way it used to do it, it still will not help very much. They're still blocking them in Britain. They're still blocking them in the United States over bananas and sugar and other small crops. Britain thought it had done something spectacular this weekend by announcing aid to Dominica, which it used to own, and for which for centuries this little island used to be one heck of a production center, a profit center for Britain. It made a big deal to announce this weekend that it was going to contribute £5 million to the restoration effort of Dominica. You see, I could only say this because, you know, I'm not the prime minister of Dominica. I tell him, keep it. £5 million. Hundreds of years of you raping this country. Literally blocking its ability to survive and subsist on its own accord. And you see for yourself the damage, the obliteration. Literally, the island has been obliterated. And you're making a big deal that you will be contributing £5 million. Keep your £5 million and put it where the sun don't shine, as far as I'm concerned. And these are the underpinnings of the big countries' relationships to the countries that they have exploited for hundreds of years. £5 million. What an insult. What an insult. And this is the kind of relationship I think we ought to start examining, because all of the islands are similarly situated. Puerto Rico is utterly devastated. And they're beginning now to organize some kind of help. But what do we see? We see help, and we see help. We see color-coded help in Puerto Rico. It's beginning to show right in your face. Some people will get help immediately. But depending on the melanin content of your skin, you will have to wait a little bit longer, much longer, before you get the help that you need. And that's a fact. The help is going to go to the privileged class first. The help that is needed by the masses of people, they'll have to wait. and be creative about how to survive another month or two. You see, Puerto Rico, a possession, literally, of the United States. And we know the fix is in already for Puerto Rico. That's what I've been talking about just before the storm hit, if you recall. They divided up Puerto Rico in a federal court in New York City a couple of weeks ago. Who's going to get what? They forced that island, they forced it into bankruptcy. So it has no reserves, not even to defend itself against starvation. Just like Detroit, they forced it into bankruptcy. And now comes the idea that they ought to find a way to pay off its so-called debts. What debts? Let's talk about debts. What debts could you have in Puerto Rico? The debts are for schools. They shut down 184 of those already. The debts have to do with essential services to the people. The United States is not interested in footing that bill. It says your incompetence. It says to Puerto Rico, political incompetence, your inability to manage a budget, has created a condition in which your revenues don't even come close to your expenses. So we're going to have to put you in receivership since you folks can't govern yourselves. And so they did. All of Puerto Rico's essential services have already been cut. The storm just came in and finished it off. And now comes the vultures. With the cooperation of the government to carve up the island. Who's going to get what? They're calling in their debts that they shouldn't have, because Puerto Rico is the United States. Puerto Ricans are Americans. Puerto Ricans are Americans. And they deserve the same considerations as the mainlanders. But they don't get it. And this storm, oh, it was a godsend to the real estate people, to the bankers, to the folks who have a plan and had this plan a long time ago. They were successful in getting Puerto Rico declared bankrupt, and now they're going to push hard to claim what they say is theirs by order of the court, with the court's permission, and there is going to be development like you have never seen. All the ills that couldn't be solved. You will see Puerto Rico bounce back with a speed that will be unbelievable. But then the Puerto Ricans can't live there. They won't be able to afford to live there. They will have to go someplace else. Where that would be, we don't know. But that's in the works. So one of the subtexts of all of this help is that they are not giving the kind of help that would encourage people to stay. Fight through it and stay. Struggle with adversity, but stay. Not going to happen. You look at the British Virgin Islands. You know what they call themselves? The bastard children of the British Empire. Because Britain has no intention of fulfilling its responsibility to the lands that they conquered and pressed people into forced labor. And here's what's even worse. Like the United States, Puerto Rico became independent just as they needed men to go fight in World War I. What do you think they got them? That's where they got them. Or they raided the Caribbean to get muscled men to go build the canal, the Panama Canal. So this is the relationship, a predatory relationship that has existed for a very long time in the Caribbean. And when deep trouble comes, you have the abomination of Britain scratching up £5 million to restore a nation it used to own, and it is still oppressing that nation. It can't sell its goods and services on the open market. Now, what do we do? Can we do anything? That's a question. And I say yes. We can begin to discuss these things in the open. Just take the scab off of this festering sore. This is not the first time the islands have experienced hardship. They've shown they can live through hardship before. But this is a different situation. While they are experiencing hardship, their former political bosses, under the guise that they're helping, are not intending really to help. They're not intending to help. And they will watch these people descend into squalor, into a state of incredible violence directed at each other. That's where this is all heading. People have no food. They will do illegal things to get food. They will loot. They will raid each other's homes. The last thing they are going to do is to fight the people who put them in that condition. You see? Because the psychology has already sunken in. You're responsible. You have all this going for you, and yet you can't make a go of it. But we are overburdened. We have wars to support. We have a whole bunch of people coming into the country, new people. We have other things to tend to. We no longer can carry you as a burden. You're a burden now. And people would say, well, hundreds of years, we've been carrying you. And their response will be, that was then, and this is now. So take the 5 million pounds that we think will rebuild your entire country, or leave it. And that's what we need to understand about what's going on now. They're trying to jettison these countries that they absolutely raped over and over and over and over again of their goods and services and human labor and everything good you can get from a small country. They did it for hundreds of years. In the situation where we're in, they have very little to offer, or they're offering the kind of help that is merely minimal help. And they will still throw the burden back on the individuals that they're responsible for themselves. They're responsible for lifting themselves up by their own bootstraps. After all, you're not the first country that experienced a hurricane. And there's only so much we can do. We ourselves are stressed. And we've stretched our budgets as far as we can take them. But now is the time. And little by little, there will be no coverage, as there is now with many of the little islands. You're not hearing anything about what's going on there. You're hearing Puerto Rico. And you're hearing about Puerto Rico because the Puerto Ricans stateside are also now part of a political force that could make life very difficult for them. So they are doing this as a way of buttressing their political strength against any further criticism that they have not really done a good job. And elections are coming up, midterm elections, and then before you know it, presidential elections, and they're hoping by then to erase any negative memory of the United States not doing what it's supposed to do. But mind it, watch this thing. The entire Caribbean basin is under attack. A different method they're using, but it is under direct attack to destroy them. So that the land can be reclaimed, the U.S. goes into expansionist mode. And guess what? It will have its own circle of power, geographic power. We take this little break and come back and talk about two protests right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, let's talk about a tale of two protests. Free agent quarterback Colin Kaepernick, a one-man protest against white supremacy and injustice, got a huge boost this weekend as several professionals in the sport and other high-profile people stood with him and bought in. They bought in. Meanwhile, before that happened, on Friday, students at Howard University found themselves in vigorous protest against Howard University's decision to have fired FBI Director James Comey deliver the keynote address at its opening convocation. It's 150th, by the way. Not only that, the previous month, last month, Howard University announced that Comey will be, get this, its King, as in Martin Luther King, endowed chair in public policy. So we have one person, Kaepernick, getting people to buy in to what he's trying to do, what he's standing for. We have a bunch of other people at a university started at the bottom of a church, in the basement of a church, with money from former slaves, inviting the FBI director who was fired for his various lies and incompetence and his long-term cover for Hillary Clinton. Come in and address the 150th convocation of this incredible university. And not only that, we're going to make you the king endowed chair in public policy. Not really. What are we going to do? And then Comey, in the presence of everybody, starts in a very condescending way talking to the protesters as if they were children, when they clearly see a sellout. They clearly see that their university president sold them out and sold the university out, put everything on the chopping block for money. It's the same thing Hillary did at Medgar Evers. The president of Medgar Evers and all the people at Medgar Evers in a position to influence the president's decision shut up. They said nothing, except that while they were saying nothing, the honor attached to the name of Medgar Evers was prostituted for Hillary Clinton's sake, to revive her, to restore some semblance of dignity to this woman who does not deserve it. Howard University? Howard University that my brother graduated from? And selected Howard University, left Columbia University and said, I'm not learning anything here. I'm going to where I could learn something, and that was Howard University, from which he graduated and went directly to medical school. Not really. So I want to ask you, am I wrong to be having these palpitations? Am I seeing this whole thing wrong? Isn't it time that we get really robust about this? Kaepernick is following, by the way, in the long tradition of African American sports heroes who placed their careers, money that they could make on the line in service of social and political justice. And you bring this, drag this piece of garbage into a holy place like Howard University, and you think that that's okay. And you name him to head up the King Endowed Chair in Public Policy. You know, that makes me want to throw up. What are you thinking about this? 888-874-4888. What should we do? What should we do about these insults? This requires, you know what? This requires a whole real serious march and protest to call out that lily-livered president at Howard University and all the cronies there with him who would allow the desecration of the university with this nonsense. If you're going to name somebody worth it. Somebody with credentials. You install in the name of King, whose life was set up to be taken, to be assassinated by the FBI. How many other black leaders have we lost to the FBI? And this is the best thing you can do as an educational institution with such an illustrious history. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. And if you're not, we ought to make you ashamed of yourself. This is outrageous. So I watched that and I said, look at that. We have come so far. And it's as if we haven't come far at all. People have made such effort to give us gifts at their own expense, at their own lives. And this is what we do with it. And the president of the college is sitting there while James Comey presumes to lecture in a condescending way, in a smarmy, smart-ass way. People who correctly are protesting. And the president sits there and he's applauding when Comey upbraids the protesters. And the other people, professors, are there applauding. And I said, they all must be on some new drug. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Oh, I had a winner of a weekend here.
I hear. Well, you know what? I think we probably should be holding Howard accountable. And basically, what we should probably be encouraging is, if this does not change, we should direct their enrollment to another historically black college. I see it as a way to, you know, make the administration know that we're not happy with this. So we could direct them to other black universities. Matter of fact, I think there's a black university in D.C., Coppin State, that they can be directed to. So I think we need to try to direct them away from Howard until stuff changes. And I know with HBCUs having issues with enrollment, and I know Howard is one of the more university, you know, one of the HBCU universities that really doesn't have much enrollment issues, you know, compared to the other HBCUs that are threatening to close. But yeah, I think we should go ahead and try to do that until this changes.
I think that's a very good suggestion. You know, this thing, this position. Being King Endowed Chair, there's an endowment that goes with it, which means, and I don't know who put up the money, because the way it works is somebody funds the chair. Somebody funds this position. Mm-hmm. And they apparently funded it to the tune of $100,000. Now, what Comey did was say, because he's, you know, big-hearted like that. He says, I won't take the money. I will put the money to other uses, to sponsor other young people and their college education, which in effect becomes, you know, the college got a free $100,000. And for that, James Comey gets to be rehabilitated. You know, they come to the black community for rehabilitation all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, people like Hillary Clinton, who nobody decent in the world would want to be close to, goes to the black community. And they surround them, you know, like how Jesse Jackson and others went to Washington, D.C. to redeem Bill Clinton, to prayer. Let's get to prayer. to prayer over this good-for-nothing president. And with that, he was free again. He's a serial rapist. And you have all these people fighting to get to surround him in prayer. And that's what they do. They clean up these miscreants. And so Comey, now having been fired and still facing charges, by the way, he's still being investigated. And this is exactly the guy that Howard University thinks should occupy the position of King Endowed Chair in Public Policy. Well, I tell you. Thanks, Henry, for your call. Ali from New York, what are you thinking?
How are you, Teresa? How are you doing?
Okay. I'll get better.
Okay, good. This is what I'm going to tell you. Do you remember back when Patria had an affair with a woman who wrote his biography?
Yes.
And he actually either resigned or they let him go. So I'm going to tell you what I did. There was a few groups here in New York City. I graduated from the City of New York University, so to the public school here in the city. And I just wanted to tell you, when I heard that this man was hired by the City of New York to teach in one of the schools here, there was a few groups that put a lot of pressure to the school to let this man go. I was one of those people that it was there almost every week in front of the building. And the building is this special school that they put a special people to go to the school. I forgot the name of the school, but it's on between It's on 6768 Street between 9th Avenue and Central Park West. That we put so much pressure showing up that they didn't know what to do. At one time, because he was supposed to be teaching in that school. So when we show up, they have more cops than the people that they were protesting. There were some veterans that they went to support the kids. So what I'm saying is that in Howard, the students can just, they can't do it just one day when these men show up. They have to do it all the time to put pressure on Howard administration to retake or resend what the title that they had given to this man.
But the public,
they have,
the public and the community will have to support the kids. They'll have to support the students who are raising a very legitimate protest here. I think that is important. And they have to call into account the president, all of the administrators, the members of the board of directors of Howard University. This is a huge insult. And they have got to arrest it and correct it immediately. Get how he got there, how they okayed this, is beyond me.
And I have
everybody
to tell you,
has to be accountable here.
And I actually called the chancellor of the New York, of the city of New York, you know, the chancellor who is in charge of the university,
the CUNY,
of the colleges.
Yes.
Yeah, the CUNY. Yes, exactly. And that's what I did. I also called them up. And it has been a few times that I have called them up too, because something happened at Brooklyn College. And this is what you have to do. But I just wanted to say something real quick about Dominica and what is happening in Puerto Rico and all those areas. You see, one of the things that I think us as human, we don't understand is a lot of time when some of these colonial, all these countries, they use this small country as colonial pieces. People are very proud to say who they are under. I went to Rotterdam in Holland, and I met a few people that they were coming from some of those French, Dutch islands. And you have to see how proud that they are under those countries.
Oh,
so
sure.
This is
if you spoke to people under the British system, they're more British than the British. That, too, is a byproduct of colonialism. As if it gives you some kind of status in the world that you are dominated and practically owned, and your children will be owned and their children would be owned by some entity that doesn't give a damn about you in the first place.
And I just have to tell you, I know some Puerto Ricans here that they just say they are an American citizen and their island should be at a statehood. And you have to hear how they demand the United States because they're so Americans. So this is a big problem, because it's not only what is happening, it's about these people not speaking up. You have a lot of people like that, and that is a big problem. I just wanted to to put that out there, that is a
All
big
right.
problem.
Thank you
okay,
so much
you.
For calling in today. David,
thank
you're
you.
The last person, and you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
This is David from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Yes, I want to tell you what I've been thinking about this. First of all, I think everybody ought to know that when you mention the FBI, the FBI is a secret police organization. And here you have the former head of the secret police at Howard University. And
mm-hmm.
one of the jobs of the secret police was to keep white supremacy in effect and to put a check on people of color in this country. So this is ridiculous. The other thing is
including, by the way, Martin Luther King, after
yes,
whom this chair is
made. They tried everything they could in terms of intelligence and to do damaging things, and even to the point of trying to attempt him to commit suicide. You know, people need to know this history. The other thing about this that comes to my mind, I'd like to know, identify where they got that money for this endowment.
Yes, I'm asking the same question. I really am.
Who gave them this money? I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that. And, you know, it's atrocious to think that he's going to be the chair of public policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. Public policy, the public policy here is to do the same thing that has been done from the early period, to maintain a system of white supremacy and have that come into effect, dominate the whole place, divide and conquer all the people, and keep the oligarchs and plutocrats at the top, and it's working fine. All those little people
we'll
are going around.
We'll have to leave it there today, I'm afraid, because we're out of time.
Oh, boy.
But thank you so much. It was a perfect ending for today's program. And these things should not be allowed to stand. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. A very good program, and you should listen in. You will see each other tomorrow. And thank you so much for listening. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.